Stockholm, Paris, Berlin, Kiev, Ljubljana, Bratislava, Amsterdam, Bucharest, 2, 1.
Welcome to our Christmas edition of Network Europe. I'm Barbara Grobon. Coming up on the program, Santa Claus lives close by, but how do Swedes celebrate Christmas? Why Czechs feel Santa has outstayed his welcome? And we'll be in the front row for a production of Hans Christian Andersen's The Little Match Girl.
I hope it disturbs people. That's what I want to do. I want to disturb people. I want to, you know, in some way, make people feel a bit uncomfortable. And this is what Hans Christian Andersen was doing, I'm sure. You know, he wanted them to feel guilty about the big Christmas tree and the plum pudding and the goose steaming on the table, because there's all these other people in the world that are actually starving or very poor.
Those stories, plus our latest quiz coming up, so stay tuned. Well, despite the lack of snow in Europe for White Christmas, people across the continent are getting into the festive mood. In Germany, drinking Glühwein, a hot spicy wine at one of the many beautiful Christmas markets, is a must in the run-up to the festive days. In Paris, you shouldn't miss the capital's famous Christmas decorations. Every year, the Grand Magasin sees department stores battle it out for the most lavishly decorated and lit shop windows. But no matter where you are, how you celebrate Christmas often reflects both traditions and changes in society. Radio Sweden's Dave Russells looks at how traditions in Sweden have changed over the years and the way Swedes now celebrate Christmas.
Like many countries in Europe, Christmas in Sweden, Jul as it's called, is a time of feasting and celebration. Plenty to eat and drink, old favourites on the television, songs on the radio, and of course the giving and receiving of presents around the tree. But how do today's celebrations match up to those in Sweden over a century ago? To find out, I went along to Skansen, the oldest open-air museum in the world, high up in the heart of Stockholm. Over the years, 150 historical buildings have been moved here from all over Sweden, most date from the 18th and 19th centuries. Visitors to the houses and farmsteads walking through the Christmas market are met by historical interpreters in period costume, including Anna Nieland.
We have a lot of houses here when we show old traditions, and they are not so much decorated. We have a lot of Christmas decorations today, but in those days it was straw, often on the floor as a carpet. It was a crown of straw over the table and perhaps a cross of straw under the table to protect against evil spirits.
What about the Christmas tree?
The Christmas tree is a rather new tradition in Sweden. It's come from Germany and was coming in late 1800, the beginning of 1900. Before that, we had julstång, a Christmas tree outside. Well, tall one, and have chopped down the branches, some of the branches. And they were raised in the day of Thomas, the 21st of December, and to show that now start the celebration of the Christmas.
The Christmas tree was not brought into the Swedish home until one or two days before Christmas and was taken down on St. Knut's Day, the 13th of January, the saint declaring that Christmas should be celebrated for 20 days. Swedes would dance around the Christmas tree before throwing it out, a tradition which is very much alive today, as Swedish journalist Maria Kvistberg explains.
There's a saying, on 20 Knut dansas julen ut, that means on this day of Knut we will dance Christmas out of the house. And I'm born on the 15th of January, so when I was a kid, we had this julgransplundring. That's the Swedish name for when you throw out the Christmas tree. And then we danced around and singing all these Christmas songs and undressed, if you can say that, the Christmas tree.
Swedes celebrate Christmas on Christmas Eve. The mornings are spent preparing the Christmas dinner, known as the Yule board, a smorgasbord of dishes going back to the days when most Swedes were farmers.
In the olden days, it was fresh food. You know, every food was stored food. It was salted and smoked and dried. But for Christmas, it was fresh.
And what would they eat?
It wasn't so common to eat ham. Yeah, in the southern provinces, they could have pig. But in the north, it was more common to have a calf or sheep meat. And some more wealthy families, they have different kind of sausages. Butter and bread and cheese, and of course the drink snaps.
It's very similar to the smörgåsbord with ham and Swedish meatballs and something called the Jansson's frestelse, Jansson's temptation, with the potatoes and anchovies, and it's all gratinated in the oven. A lot of people, I guess, have a lutfisk. It's dried fish that's been dried, so it's hard, and then for a long time, and then you put it in water, and then you have that with a white sauce. It's not one of my favorites. For me, very important, the Jansson's frestelse and the ham and meatballs with sill, herring, in different forms, together with schnapps.
Christmas presents called Yule Klapp are opened on Christmas Eve after the Christmas dinner, but weren't so common in Christmas past.
The word Yule Klapp, it's said that it comes from somebody that knocks, klapp on the door and throw in something, a piece of wood or something made of straw with written a little poem, quite evil could it be, a little, it's a joke, and then they'd run away, and the people in the house, they would try to get that one, and if they managed to get the person that had done this, they took him inside and thought, oh, naughty one here, so, but after a while they give him something to eat and to drink and so on. It was a bit of a joke.
For children today, Christmas presents are brought by Father Christmas, not the mysterious figure coming down the chimney at midnight, but through the front door, courtesy of a neighbour or family friend dressed as Santa. Known as Tomter here, Swedes also have a house tomter, which dates back centuries.
Yeah, we talk about this gorge tomter. Tomter, it's a small man, not higher than a six-year-old boy, and he was protecting the farmstead. The name Tomt, it's the name for the land that you have your property. And he took care of that, and he took care of the animals, and was very interested in the children also. But he also wanted to have something for his job. So you have to give him usually porridge. So it's old folklore.
And what about the religious aspect to Christmas?
Yeah, it's not so strong. But I think still, yeah, perhaps more the older people, they go to church in the Christmas day, julotta, early in the morning.
It doesn't have to date back hundreds of years for something to become a Christmas tradition. In Sweden, Maria says there's one modern tradition which is a must for Swedes on Christmas Eve afternoon, a cartoon.
What is that, that cartoon?
Kalle Anka på julafton, alltså Donald Duck. It's, I guess it's been running for 40 years or something, at 3 o'clock on Christmas Eve. And it's a mixture of different Walt Disney characters. It's the same. Everybody can the lines, and it's a bit boring, actually, because you've seen it so many times. But you don't want to miss it. And in my family, we watch it, and we have some glögg, the Swedish warm wine. Kalle ville stanna kvar, den som visan skrivit har, som jag ägnar
denna enkla sjömanstrall. Dave Russell from Radio Sweden reporting there on Swedish Christmas traditions. Then I can see old Santa in the keyhole, I'll get to the car. One beacon I'll try there, oh, oh, there's an eye there. Is that you, Santa Claus? Let's face it, everywhere you turn at this time of the year,
you can't help but bump into a fat man with a white beard dressed in a red suit. Santa Claus is everywhere, on shopping bags, in shop windows, you name it. But Santa Claus is a relatively new phenomenon in the Czech Republic. A similar figure, Mikuláš, visits children on December 5th, while presents are delivered on December 24th by the baby Jesus. Some Czechs resent the ever-present Santa Claus, saying the figure has a negative influence on Czech kids. Taking matters into their own hands, the Creative Copywriters Club has set up a website with a simple message, Santa, go home. Ian Willoughby from Radio Prague caught up with David Koenig from the club at a shopping mall in the Czech capital.
Well, I'd like to say clearly I'm not against Santa himself. He's an American or English tradition and I just respect it. But I'd like to ask Anglo-Saxons just to be so kind as to respect my traditions or Czech traditions. Santa is little... How to say that? Alien here.
On your website, anti-santa.cz, you tell a story about a book that you read for your daughter in which there was a big confusion between the figure of Ježíšek, the baby Jesus, and Santa Claus.
Yes, that's it. That was a last kick to do something about that. Because, you know, it's really confusing when on a picture is Santa and he's called by other characters of the book, like Ježíšek. You know, it's confusing. Ježíšek is, this is the right person who brings gifts in my country.
On your website, you have a forum for people to express their opinions about Santa Claus in the Czech Republic. What kind of things are people saying? What reaction have you got from people on your website?
They mostly say something like, thank you for your initiative. I hate Santa as well, and it's a high time to do something with it. There were maybe two people, I think they are Americans settled in Czech Republic. They wrote me something like, why? It's just a symbol, nothing... serious or something, isn't it xenophobia? And I say, no, it's not xenophobia. I like America, I like rock and roll, I like Elvis Presley, but I doesn't like Santa Claus.
Earlier we passed here in this shopping center a toy shop with a Santa, Lego Santa, in the window. How much or how often do you come across the figure of Santa in Czech culture? Is it really so common here now? And if so, have you seen that become more common in recent years?
I think it's more common than recent years. More common than last year. It's maybe in every third window pane I'm crossing by.
Why do you think it is that it's becoming more common here, Santa Claus?
Well, I think that the international companies and shopping chains and advertising companies too are just too lazy or something, I don't know, to shoot Czech's TV spot or make some Christmas decoration with the Czech traditions. And maybe it's also because of money, because, you know, there are shopping chains they have the same decorations in all of the world, so they use it in here also. I think it's crazy because all the marketing is about to fulfill customers' needs. This is not fulfilling any need. This is about to force us to celebrate our feasts another way, the alien way. Mr. Kris Kringle, come and stand while kicking with God's angel. They can acknowledge my wisdom and understand that Santa Claus is a black man. Word up! Santa baby, just slip up into under the tree for me. A 98 convertible light blue. I'm looking for a fly guy like you. So hurry down the chimney tonight.
Ian Willoughby from Radio Prague with this anti-Santa interview. And if you want to check out the website, go to www.anti-santa.com. www.network.cz or follow the links from our webpage at networkeurope.org. You're listening to Network Europe, a co-production of Europe's leading international broadcasters. Well, and now to Paris. The French capital always draws hordes of tourists from all over the world, particularly around Christmas. And there are several reasons for that. First, buying Christmas presents in the capital of Haute Couture is the ultimate chic. Paris is also referred to as the City of Lights, and the Christmas decorations only enhance the capital's reputation, especially the Eiffel Tower with its special Christmas coat. Nearby, the new Quai Branly Museum for Indigenous Art is organizing special events during the festive season. And as RFI's Nick Champeau reports, this year it's all about African Christmas.
Directors of the Paris Quai Branly Museum say the aim of the Riverside Institution is to bring continents and cultures together. Most museums celebrate their country's history and traditions. We celebrate cultural diversity. That's their motto. So instead of focusing on oysters, foie gras and Christmas à la française, the Quai Branly Museum of Non-Western Art is organizing a two-week-long African Christmas over the festive season. That's what Cécile Dumoulin told me in her broken English. She's in charge of workshops at the 260 million euro institution.
One of the aims of the Quai Branly is to share cultures and to discover other cultures and to dialogue one with the others. So Christmas is a moment of share, of sharing, and it's important for us to offer a moment like that to the public.
Events include a workshop to introduce visitors to the African Sansa thumb piano, an African ball, storytellers, and an original workshop for children called L'autre jouet, or the other toy. Children are asked to bring a toy of their own, as long as it doesn't involve batteries or electronics. These will be distributed to children all over the world by the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. In exchange, French and European children will learn how to manufacture their own toys with recycled material. That's what African children do.
Organizing this workshop reminds me of my childhood in Africa, because that's how I made my own toys as a child.
Caen Guesson is originally from Côte d'Ivoire. He is in charge of the workshop. There are Coca-Cola cans, plastic bottles, cardboard boxes all over the floor. But for Caen, there are much more than that.
Children can play video games, but making your own toy is something else. Let me show you what my daughter and I made this morning. We use an empty plastic margarine tub. We added four blue plastic bottle tops to make the wheels, and there is your car. We had to cut holes in the tops, and children can't do that on their own. So when they come to us, adults, it's an honor to help them.
Children in France are more excited by video games and other electronic gadgets. The workshop is to remind them what the real spirit of Christmas is about. At a time more and more people complain that the commercial side of Christmas is taking over. I mentioned the concept to Aijan, a Parisian cab driver who is originally from Cameroon. He says it's an excellent idea.
Ils voient ce qui se passe ailleurs.
Children in Africa know what's going on in the rest of the world thanks to globalization. They know how spoiled many children are for Christmas, so it's difficult for them. Things will not change overnight, but it's important to remember that many children don't have anything for Christmas.
And that's precisely the aim of the other toy workshop. But Aijan is right, it's an uphill struggle. In fact, I did not get to see children bring their own toys for other children in developing countries because the first workshop was cancelled. Paris, Nick Champeau, RFI.
The Little Match Girl is one of Hans Christian Andersen's most popular fairy tales. The little girl selling matches on New Year's Eve lights one after the other in order to capture the illusions of warmth. Like many of Andersen's tales, it has a dark and bitter side. the little girl freezes to death in the snow. British songwriter and composer Martin Jakes captures this fairy tale in 12 songs he wrote for a special theatre production. He's performing The Little Match Girl with his trio, the Tiger Lilies, and is currently touring Europe. Deutsche Welle's Mariana Schroeder went to see the play in Munich.
Martin Jakes was born in Slough in a blue-collar family and spent his early years living above a brothel in Soho, which provided inspirations for many of his more lurid lyrics. He founded his musical trio, the Tiger Lilies, about 15 years ago, but the group only made its breakthrough with Shock-Headed Peter, for which Jakes won the Laurence Olivier Award in 2002.
The main breakthrough for us was a Shock-Headed Peter, or Struble Peter, which was a theatre show we did about 7 or 8 years ago, which became a big success around the world. We played all over America and New York. We did the West End and had a 12-week run there, won Olivier Awards for that, and it was a huge hit. I mean, before that we played some arts festivals, but that was the time when we really became well-known. So we went from playing in little bars to playing in theatres and, you know, playing in front of hundreds, if not thousands of people, rather than tens.
More typically, Martin Jakes writes songs about sex, drugs, prostitution, or bestiality. He performs with drummer Adrian Hugo, who worked in banks, pie shops, and is a car mechanic before discovering his true vocation. Blues and jazz musician Adrian Stout on the double bass often enhances Tiger Lily's performances using his dramatic talents. At the Edinburgh Festival, he appeared on stage dressed as a prostitute. In one scene of The Little Match Girl, Stout accompanies Jakes on the musical Saw.
The fire, it warms the match girl. She is free to dream.
Two actors complete the Match Girl ensemble. Actor Bob Goody is the man, the father and producer who loves his whiskey more than his daughter, whom he sends barefoot into the cold to earn money selling matches. The classically trained actor who studied at the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art adds a comedic counterpoint to the performance.
Basically, I play the father figure, and Letitia plays the match girl. The show is set up as if sort of strange travelling street version of the little match girl, and I'm sort of an old-fashioned producer, and we've got these mad actresses, I've got these mad singers, and these mad musicians, and I'm trying to order it all, but really all I want to do is go and drink me whiskey. So that's the starting point for the show. So along the way, I'm playing this sort of miserable old drunk who has to put on the show, who then has to be the father, but I don't really want to do any of it. So through that, we create images.
French actress Laetitia Angot plays the little match girl. Angot's ballet training stands her in good stead because the non-speaking role calls for a great deal of body language.
I'm playing the girl who plays the little match girl, I really feel that there is an interaction between what I'm playing as an actress and the story of the little match girl. I'm starting like a puppet and I try to build life and maybe at the end just acting.
On the freezing cold holiday night, the little match girl tries to sell her matches, but there's no one there to buy them. She lights one after the other, each creating the illusion of warmth, but one by one, the matches flutter out, leaving her in the cold. The Tollwood performance captures the dark side of the story. The little match girl sees a star fall and remembers a story her grandmother once told her.
For heaven, heaven in the sky, those they leave behind are all left to cry.
I hope it disturbs people. That's what I want to do. I want to disturb people. I want to, you know, in some way, make people feel a bit uncomfortable. And this is what Hans Christian Andersen was doing, I'm sure. You know, he wanted them to feel guilty about the big Christmas tree and the plum pudding and the goose steaming on the table, because there's all these other people in the world that are actually starving or very poor. Then, I mean, I'm not an overtly political artist, you know, but nevertheless, I do think about things like that, poverty and stuff like that. The Little Match Girl is a political piece in a way.
The Little Match Girl is afraid to go home, afraid of the beating she will get for not selling her matches. She retreats further and further from the audience and dies. Behind her, Christmas lights promise warmth and love, and the song that Martin Jake sings promises peace on earth. Mariana Schroeder, Deutsche Welle Radio, Munich.
The match girl dreams of peace on earth. 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 An open fire burning.
And if you happen to be in Paris, the Little Match Girl is currently playing in Paris until December 27th, before moving on to Vienna. And now's your last chance to participate in our Christmas quiz. There is a wealth of Christmas customs around Europe, some dating back hundreds of years. In a particular Nordic country, so-called Yule Brothers, visit farms and towns during the 13 days leading up to Christmas. They're strange creatures, part troll, part prankster in human form.
They come to town one by one 13 nights before Christmas. And if the children are well behaved and go early to bed, they receive a gift in their shoe. If they're not well behaved, they receive a rotten potato.
We want you to tell us in which European country naughty children get rotten potatoes in the run-up to Christmas. Email your answers to contact@networkeurope.org. We have 5 Christmas presents to give away and we'll announce the winners at the end of the month. The question again, in which Nordic country do the so-called Yule Brothers distribute rotten potatoes to naughty children? And that's all we've time for this week. Network Europe receives funding from the European Union and is a partnership of Radio France International, Radio Sweden, Radio Polonia, Radio Netherlands, Radio Romania International, Radio Prague, Radio Slovenia International and Deutsche Welle. On behalf of our pan-European team, I'm Barbara Gruber, saying thanks for tuning in and wishing you all a happy and safe festive season.